on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Tuesday, April 22nd, 2025 edition of InvestTalk, and I'm here, as always, to help guide you through this very up and down market. You have big sell-offs, big rallies, and a lot of headlines, moving markets, but ultimately it's about what the future path of the economy and earnings will be, and that will ultimately drive asset prices going forward. Now, this is a time of great uncertainty, and it takes an extra level head to navigate these times, to throw out the fear and greed, to throw out the political bias, to really focus on the facts at hand. And that's what we're to help you with, give you data and perspective with over 25 years of investment experience to give you the right path, the right frame of mind, so that you can make better decisions with your money consistently. Now, I want to remind you that we have an upcoming wealth webinar, and that is a week from tomorrow. It's our InvestTalk Wealth webinar, and it's about unlocking the power of custom indexing so you can take your investment strategy to the next level. And we'll drill down into how to navigate business transitions, how to plan for long-term success, how to maybe plan for selling a piece of property. Now's a pretty good time to do that. So how do we create diversification? How to diversify away from concentrated investment positions with precision and avoid a major tax burden, and how do you align your investments with your values? How can you exclude things that maybe you don't want to invest in? Not just simple, you know, DEI or ESG, or anything like that. You can be very specific too. And maybe it's just, I don't want tobacco stocks. Do that. Maybe I don't want alcohol stocks. You can do that. Maybe I don't want gambling stocks. You can do that. So there's a lot of ways to adjust and customize an index and still achieve your financial growth. So we're going to talk about that. Space is limited and it's going to be free. And it will be next Wednesday, April 30th. And all you have to do is register by heading over to investtalk.com. Now back to the mission at hand, which is answering your questions and giving you relevant data and perspective. In just a bit, we're going to talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now.
Hi, Justin or Luke. I'm calling today about Cisco, ticker CSCO. Hoping you could take a look at it. Let me know if you think it'll hold up in this environment. A quick look at the chart and the fundamentals. Let me know if you think I should sell out of my position. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye.
All right, looking at Cisco Systems, CSCO, and they make switches, routers. This is one of those dot-com 1.0 darlings, which, I don't know if you know this, but still hasn't reached its peak from 2000. It peaked in 2000 around $80 per share, and its recent 52-week high was around $65 per share, and now it's pulled back to around $55 per share. Now, if I zoom into a weekly chart, you'll see it's above the 50, right above the 50, right above the 100-day moving average. So it is at support. So I wouldn't be aggressive in selling it right now because it still is generally in an uptrend. Okay. Now, analysts' expectations for earnings this year and next year are coming down. It's not egregiously overpriced, you know, with a forward-looking multiple in the low to mid-teens. But until the technicals deteriorate more, I would probably hold it because it is a good company. It has a good balance sheet. It has good cash flows. And that's what you want in this environment. Now, there's still that worry hanging over it that these tariffs will up their costs and reduce the broader demand for switches and routers and other networking equipment that Cisco makes. But once again, the technicals are okay. Pull back into support and it's holding it. So I would hold it for now. Now we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes. Our main focus point is about five essential applications of generative AI in finance. So how do you use AI to help you make better decisions on the investment front, on the planning front, on the budgeting front, etc.? So we'll look into all of that and figure out which type, what tool will best fit your needs. Okay. Also, what is this? What are these tariffs doing to orders from China? And we'll dig into how impactful they have been so far. Also, a bear market. What is a bear market? And are there types of bear markets? And the simple answer is yes, there are. There are what we call structural. There are cyclical. And there are event-driven bear markets. So we're going to talk about all three and which one this is. And then if we have time, we'll look at a recent report and it's five power operators warning to Congress, issuing a warning to Congress that they are coming up on reliability shortfalls. And we'll talk about why that might be. We also have voice bank calls. One is on using investing apps and the other is on Vanguard USD corporate bond ETF. And we have some questions that came in via the YouTube channel as well. And of course, most importantly, I welcome your live calls at 888-99-CHART. But we're heading into a short break. And on the other side, I'll look at today's market activity and answer more of your questions here on Invest Talk.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
April is Financial Literacy Month. For a limited time, you can receive the first 3 months of the KPP Premium Newsletter free. Sign up now at investtalk.com and use the code KPPFLM. And now the phone lines are open, waiting for your questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Now, let's take a look at the market today. It was a decidedly green day. You had the S&P up about 2.5%, NASDAQ up a little more than that. Same with the Dow, up over 1,000 points. And you had strength really out of mid-cap growth was the best area of the market today. And it was on the back of a closed-door meeting with J.P. Morgan, where Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said that he is optimistic that there will be a trade deal with China, that it is untenable to have this level of tariffs for any length of time. And President Trump also said he never had intentions to fire Fed Chair Jerome Powell. That was a positive as well. But this is likely the first major headline around optimism on the tariff front, on that there'd be some sort of deal. And it's frankly the one with the most importance, which is obviously China. But China also said that they warned it will retaliate against countries that negotiate trade deals with the U.S. at the expense of China's interests. So there's complexities here, because remember, China, they trade most with the rest of the world, right? That we're not the biggest customer anymore. So other countries may be a bit worried that the trade deals that they agree to might also hinder their relationships with China. And so while this headline is nice and positive, underneath the surface, there's still not a lot of movement here. Over the weekend, we had Japan come and leave without a trade deal. And remember, Japan is one of our closest allies. We provide security protection to them. So the fact that we can't get a deal with them, what does that say about other countries that, you know, maybe we aren't as friendly with? I don't think it says a whole lot. And then on the economic front, you had the Richmond Fed, the April. Remember the April, we're going to start to get April data. For the past few weeks, all the data that's come in was March, pre-Liberation Day. So the market's going to start focusing on this data that really starts coming in earnest on Thursday and into early next week. But this one, the Richmond Fed, it's one Fed region, Richmond, Virginia. And it fell negative 13 month over month compared to consensus of negative 2. That's a big miss. You had shipments at negative 17%. You had new orders at negative 15. And you had employment that fell from negative 1 to negative 5. And the average growth rate of prices increased as well. Not dramatically, but a little bit. So what you get here is another bout of stagflation. There we go. That's the word I was looking for. Stagflation. Stagnant economic growth with prices rising. And you've seen a litany of that data over the past couple of weeks. And that is not generally good for markets. So that was the big economic data that we saw. And we'll get more as we head into next week. But a nice little bounce back day, kind of erase most of yesterday's losses. Very choppy environment that we are in. And that's kind of what you should expect till there's clarity. We're kind of in this no man's zone between about 5,000 on the S&P and 5,400. I know that's a wide range, roughly 8%. However, that's the reality of the situation. You could easily move very fluidly between those numbers without any breakage of the current trend, which is just chop, which is just consolidation. And when you move in one direction and you get consolidation, you're typically finding energy to move to continue that direction. Doesn't mean you have to. You could easily see this rally. And if we get above 5,400 on the S&P, then you have to start to rethink. Maybe this is the end of this current pullback, and you might get a more bullish situation over the medium term. But that's, you have to get there first, right? You have to close there first on a couple of days, and then you can start to build that more bullish view. Right now, you get more neutral. That's really what the market is right now. It's kind of in this neutral to slightly bearish setup as we wait for more news, more resolution around the trade war, around these trade deals, etc. And don't be shocked to see more chop based on both positive and negative headlines that are likely ahead. Now we're moving into a break. Still to come, my main focus point, and more answers to your questions at 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
The InvestTalk phone lines never close. And now, Justin Klein is here taking your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you ask your call and ask your question on today's show. Now, our main focus point is about AI and five essential applications that generative AI can really help with. Now, generative AI has a lot of tools that you can just ask it to basically create. Now, we use generative AI for some research. So that's number one. Right, summarizing earnings reports, for example, transcripts, things like that. Finding companies that have a high mix of sales sourced from a particular country or into a different country, for example. That's one way that you can utilize AI, and that we do. But there are other applications. One would be creating a budget. Now, you still need to do all the legwork. What's your income? What are your expenses? Debt obligations? But AI can take that data and build out a budget based on certain common rules. Something called the 50-30-20 rule, for example. You can have AI apply that to your particular personal financial situation. So that's number one. And it's really the basis of good financial literacy. Simply spending less than you make. And when you plan accordingly, it becomes a lot easier. Number two is take that budget and marry it with medium and long-term goals and what your priorities are. What are the most important things, goals to actually hit? And help it build you out a financial plan. Now, it's going to be crude. It's not going to be super detailed. But running general numbers certainly helps. It's something we do for clients, but in a more detailed way, easier to absorb, more visual way. But if you don't have an advisor, then using AI to build that plan can certainly work wonders. And then learning, using those tools to quiz you. For example, you can give it prompts to build out a game, how to, you know, figure out things like, you know, an investment simulation game, a financial trivia game around budgeting, investing, taxes, etc. That's a great way to utilize this tool. And then just generally learning about money topics, whether that's how to spend, investing habits, and you can have it tailored for beginner, intermediate, advanced. So it knows how complex to really make it. Now, one thing you have to realize though, is that AI, while it's helpful, can be wrong, often is wrong. So you do need to double check the important pieces. What I do a lot of times is I use two. I use ChatGPT as well as Perplexity. And obviously there are many more out there. But use two, three, four maybe. Use the same prompts and you're going to get different answers. And they may be conflicting in some ways. And you need to do background research. Your own background research. One thing you can do is ask for them to link to primary sources so you know where this is coming from. Is it old? Is it an old article or is it a new article? So make sure you don't just rely on it as gospel. Gives you good direction, might give you a lot of good information, but make sure you also do some of your own research. And the last is actually creating repayment scenarios. You have debt, getting the data in so that it can help you with a repayment strategy, whether that is the snowball method or the avalanche method. There's a lot of different methods there to repay debt. And so if you can allow AI to gather the pertinent information, it will guide you on which one is best for you. So there is, I think, the five, six main ways that you can utilize AI to help improve your financial knowledge and decision-making process. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this question. How much money do Americans think they need to retire? A recent survey explored Americans' perception of the ideal retirement savings amount, and it highlighted the gap between expectations and reality. That story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7 for your finance and investment questions.
I'm hoping you'll give me your take on Ormat Technologies, ORA.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Get ready for the newest InvestTalk Wealth Webinar. Custom indexing, enhancing returns with tax efficiency. Justin and Luke will examine how to navigate business transitions and plan for long-term success. The InvestTalk Wealth Webinar, April 30th, 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Registration is free now at investtalk.com.
Hello, Invest Talk. This is Yannick Sano from Denmark. I appreciate your show very much and the newsletter. Thank you very much. I have a question following your talks about the CLOs. I have some U.S. Corporate bonds. It's the ETF called with ticker VUCP, Vanguard USD Corporate Bonds. I would very much like your take on USD Corporate Bonds. Are you worried about those in general? Especially since you mentioned this CLO, new product that seems kind of a worry in general. I have a lot of cash on the sideline, and I'm thinking I should keep that way at least for a couple of months. But I'm considering to sell my stake in the USD corporate bonds. Thank you very much. Greetings from Denmark. I can tell you that there's a lot of anti-American sentiment in Denmark in these days. But anyways, appreciate your show a lot. Thank you. Bye.
Well, thank you for the kind words. And looking at the Vanguard USD Corporate Bond ETF, VUCP, and I'm looking at the portfolio, and these are mainly corporate bonds, not CLOs. So CLOs are generally linked to these private equity deals, and that's what they are backed on with. There's leverage there. Now, the actual corporate bond market today, the traditional corporate bond market issued by, think of public companies, they are typically safer than they have been in the past, because there's been less issuance because a lot of the borrowing has moved to these private debt funds. And that makes them a bit safer than they have been in the past. Now, this one in particular has a lot of debt on a lot of very large corporations. Its top holdings are Anheuser-Busch, Philip Morris, T-Mobile, AT&T, Bank of America, CVS, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Boeing, and Goldman Sachs. Those are the top 10 holdings, top 10 bonds. Now, it's very well diversified. There are about 10,000 different bond holdings here. Its effective maturity is 9.9 years, though, so there's some duration risk here that I worry about. The average credit rating is about A-, so that's very high. It's pretty much all investment grade. So I have no problem really with the credit quality here. It's more of the duration risk. With CLOs, I do worry a lot more about the credit quality there. With a lot of murkiness to how those deals were structured, what type of risk they were taking, etc. These public companies, it's a lot easier to understand because their data is public. It's very transparent. And like I said, there isn't a lot of bad lending that's been done over the past decade plus in that space compared to, you know, previous cycles. And that's why I don't have an issue with this on that front, on the credit quality front. But almost 10 years in maturity, total maturity on average, is too high for my blood. Right? I don't want that much duration risk, especially if you continue to get sell-offs on 10-year bonds. This will mirror that in many ways. So I don't hate it completely. I'd like to see what other holdings you might have. You know, if this is a small position compared to a lot of other short-term bonds, you know, maybe not a big deal. But if this is your primary bond holding, I would worry too much about that duration risk. Thanks for the call. Now let's head over to our YouTube channel and check out a question that came in from a listener. I said, Lindsay True says, it seems to be a growing trend in the dental field for dentists and specialists to sell their practice to private equity firms like Paradigm Oral Health, who will own and manage their practices for them while giving them shares in the company. The pay is lower than the profits would be as a practice owner, but these firms tout their massive growth and try to sell you on the millions you'll make over time as your company's shares increase in value. What are your thoughts on these kind of business models for dentists for an investment standpoint? Well, first off, if it's just promising growth for lower pay and the hope that in the future there will be growth, I wouldn't go with that. Now, if they give you a big chunk and it's big enough, you know, for your stake in the business and you don't want to operate the business, then it could work out. Now, the worry here, what I've seen in this world is that, yes, they run your practice, and that is a good thing, but they also run your practice, and that can be a bad thing. Meaning, if you're a doctor or a dentist, and you practice a certain way, that way of practicing medicine could be opposite or in conflict with the way that these new managers want to run your business. Simple as that. And what I see a lot of times is the practitioners, the dentists and the doctors, butt heads with these new managers. And it becomes an issue. So it's not just about the quote unquote investment, the dollars work out. It's about the philosophy of practicing what you practice, doing it the way you want to practice, the flexibility to take time off, to not push things on patients that aren't needed. Because remember, that's what these private equity firms are looking to do. They're looking to make money. And they see your customer base as opportunity, not as patients, not as people that they truly care about. They're going to look at it as, hey, we have this practice has this many patients. They've been growing this amount. If we do X, Y, and Z, they're going to run all these numbers. If we just increase our average, you know, average within the space for revenue is X, they're a little bit under that. If we do X, Y, and Z, we can get that up to average or above average. And now our profit margins are much higher. And in addition, a lot of times they will maybe borrow money, add debt to the equation, expand the practice in certain ways. Maybe that's more rooms, bigger office, whatever that is. And that also can add extra risk. So is it a bad idea? Not necessarily. Is it a good idea? Not necessarily either. You just have to go into it with your eyes wide open, understanding what private equity is there for. It's to make money. And if you are flexible and going along with that, then it might work out. If you aren't flexible, well, you're going to butt heads and it's ultimately going to cause more heartache than it's really worth. Hope that helped. Now let's talk a little bit about these tariffs and what is happening with Chinese factories as well as American businesses. Now, as you'd imagine, there are cancellations. The original 34% tariff as part of Liberation Day, that was a impetus for a lot of the factories to cut prices, right? Let's meet in the middle. A lot of them cut prices 5, 10% to try to offset some of these tariffs. But when they raised them to 84%, then 125%, there's really no room for doing business anymore. And so a lot of these orders were canceled that were placed earlier in the year. Now, Capital Economics thinks that if these tariffs are left in place, exports to America from China will drop by 50% in the coming years. And a lot of these factories are just willing to lose orders. They're not going to discount anymore. And they're looking for other buyers in the rest of Asia and mainly Europe. Remember, Europe is now the biggest buyer of Chinese goods, not the US. So they have more options there. And the reason they don't have much wiggle room is because their margins typically are very small. Typically, they are only 5 or 10%. And the American buyers were asking typically for discounts of 20 to 30% on average. So as you'd imagine, they said, no, it's untenable. I'm going to lose money. Now, other countries have already put their own trade barriers on China as well, because they're worried that they will dump these cheap goods into their markets. So that makes it a challenging environment for China, but also for US importers who in many cases don't have alternatives. I've talked to these businesses. The level of sophistication in China, the level of integrated supply chains that they've built up through the last few decades is really unparalleled. And most of these products take multiple inputs. They're not just building one thing. They're importing batteries from South Korea, motors from Japan, chips from South Korea or Taiwan. And they're putting it together in China. That's often what is happening. And to replace that is just next to impossible. If they can get cheaper labor elsewhere, because I don't know if you know this, but Chinese labor, manufacturing labor, not cheap. Everything's Chinese labor, they produce in China because it's cheap labor. It's not true. The average worker there makes a little over $8 per hour, whereas the rest of Asia, it's closer to $2 or $3 per hour. Think about that. The average Chinese worker in a factory makes more than our minimum wage here. So it's not cheap labor. It's robust supply chains and capabilities to do tooling and things like that. So it's not this easy fix that U.S. businesses can just pivot. It doesn't work like that. And so that's the situation both sides are dealing with. China is attempting to find new buyers, and they're having limited success. U.S. manufacturers, U.S. companies are trying to find alternatives, but once again, limited success. And that's why this is stagflationary, because it's a supply shock. Higher prices, lower economic activity. Now let's play another caller question now.
Hello, I have been a long-time listener of this podcast, and I totally enjoy the knowledge that you guys are providing us. Thank you so much for that. I kind of need some sort of a direction. I have COVID stocks, I would say, which is Zoom and TeleDoc, TDoc and Zoom CM. I'm down in that, and I'm not sure what to do with it now. I have been holding it for a few years now, which I bought it during the time of COVID. So it would be a wise idea maybe to drop it off, let go, or should I just hold it and see how the business is doing? It holds a certain percentage of my portfolio, yes, but I am not sure how to deal with these two stocks. Thank you again. Bye.
Well, just because you're down on both doesn't mean you treat them the same. Just because you bought them poorly doesn't mean you treat them the same. They're different. Teladoc is expected to lose money this year and next year. It's very much a losing stock. And, you know, it's a lesson there. Zoom, on the other hand, you bought it wrong. Still a good company, still making good money. It just was egregiously overpriced back in 2020 and 2021. Now it's more reasonable. Trading about $71 per share. So it's earned $5.53 next year, $5.40 this year. So a low teens multiple. And we actually own Zoom for our clients. So I like Zoom. I like the cash flow. No dividend, but I would continue to hold it. Because remember, this is all about your alternative. With that capital. Alternative uses. Teladoc is likely to just dilute shareholders and sell more and more shares to keep itself afloat. There's no real economic moat there. Whereas Zoom, you know, it's kind of the band-aid of video conferencing, right? The brand name there. Now, we use Zoom internally. We like it. And, you know, it's not a fast grower anymore, but it's certainly a solid business. So I'd sell Teladoc and I would hold Zoom. Now, as we move to a break, let me tell you about a special opportunity to enhance your financial knowledge. And for a limited time, you can receive the first 3 months of our KPP Premium newsletter absolutely free by using the code KPPFLM for Financial Literacy Month by heading over to investtalk.com. Now, we're heading to a break. Give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go look at another question that came in from the comment section in our YouTube channel. Dean Harper says, what do you think about stock Alcoa? Is this a good entry point? I've been looking into basic materials outside of gold and silver. Stock price went down despite positive earnings. It's down 50% from its 52-week high in December. Now, a lot of people might look at that and say it's on a discount. I look at it and say it's in a downtrend, and it certainly is. Went from 48 now down to 24, like you said, down 50%. And this, remember, Alcoa produces aluminum mainly, and it's a business that is up and down all over the place. 2018, they made 370, then lost nearly a dollar in 2019, then lost $1.16 in 2020. That was during COVID, naturally. 2021, they made a bunch of money, $6.83, then to $4.71, then lost $2.27 in 2023, and then back to $1.35 last year. Then supposed to make $3.62 this year, but earnings expectations are coming down. So when I read that off to you, that should immediately sell you there's not a lot of pricing power here. This is what we call a price taker. It's all over the board. There's no consistency to this business. It may look cheap today, but it could look wildly expensive tomorrow because it could swing to a big loss. And that's what analysts are, you know, downgrading earnings expectations towards. Maybe not all the way to a loss, but, you know, much lower earnings than they're expecting this year. I just don't like these businesses. I don't like businesses that have that level of volatility. And so what's down? I think it's down for a good reason. And I don't find it cheap just because it's supposed to earn 362 this year. Now, if it's supposed to earn 362 consistently year after year, yeah, it's probably cheap. But that's not the case with Alcoa. So I think there's much better opportunities for your capital right now than Alcoa. So I'd pass. Now let's talk about bear markets. What are the types of bear markets? Now we're in a bear market, right? Down 20% from our high. But this would be considered what we consider a structural bear, sorry, not structural, an event-driven bear market. These are sudden shocks to the system. Typically a war, in this case it's a trade war. Could be a pandemic. You saw that in 2020. You could see major price disruptions in markets, say big spikes in oil, for example. And these event-driven bear markets typically go down about 30%. Then you have cyclical bear markets. They last typically 2+ years. And stocks drop on average about 30%. I think of this as 2000 to 2003 timeframe. I think it was about 2.5 years that we were in a bear market. And the NASDAQ was down a ton. But the S&P, I think, was down, in that 20 to 30% range. And then there's these structural bear markets. These are where there are major economic and financial imbalances that must be corrected. 1929 was obviously one. And then 08, right, the financial crisis. They typically last about 3.5 years on average. And the typical decline is about 60%. Now, if this is event-driven, then we probably only have a little bit further to go. But it can morph into a cyclical bear market, meaning we have a recession. And that means, you know, probably last another couple of years. It could also morph into a structural bear market if you're talking about major changes in the global financial system, in the trading environment globally. And that means there could be much, much further to go. It all depends on how transformative these policies will be and how long lasting they will be as well. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. I encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And keep in mind, if you need help understanding how to navigate this bear market, but still achieve your overall goals, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and schedule a free portfolio review with myself or Luke. This is a free and confidential service. And if you haven't optimized your 401k, we can help there as well. Just start at investtalk.com. And we're counting on the days to the next free InvestTalk Wealth webinar. It all happens online a week from tomorrow, April 30th. So register as well at investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.